Hello, everyone. I'm Susan. I am an alcoholic. It's good to see all of you here today. I want to welcome you and thank you for coming. I know Jim was very special to many people in these rooms, and I'm very honored to be here today as Jim's friend and minister to officiate his service. We light this candle today in honor of Jim Harp. His spirit now lights the heavens as it always has on earth. This candle flame symbolizes the eternal light of his spirit. Let's close our eyes for just a moment for prayer. Lord, we thank you for the blessings you have bestowed upon us. We thank you for the time we've had with Jim. And we honor you, Jim, as you take this next step in your journey as spirit. Know that our love goes with you. Amen.
We've gathered here today, family and friends, to acknowledge the passing of Jim Harp. He was a loving father, grandfather, brother, uncle, and a beloved friend to many of us. And though we gather here today with grief and sorrow, we also gather here in celebration to celebrate Jim's life. It's been a difficult week and a half for the family and friends. Jim passed suddenly, unexpectedly. In fact, the day before he passed, he was out and about with his friends. He chaired the 545 here at NAVA, and then he went out to dinner. And for all appearances, he was doing great. So his death the following day was shocking and devastating. And it's going to take time for the family and the friends to wrap their mind around it and to heal their hearts. Yet we know that in the presence of death, we must sing a song of life. And out of our sorrows will come another level of understanding. Death teaches us how important it is to really appreciate life and to appreciate one another. It teaches us to notice the world around us and the beauty and wonder in it. And both life and death are steps in our journey here as spirit. As a minister, I embody a belief system, and I'll share some of that with you today in honor of Jim's life. My belief is that he lives on in spirit and that he has transitioned to a much better place, another dimension of existence, that he has passed into a richer life where he will gain a greater consciousness with God. And now he can sail onto smoother seas, free from the bondage and the limitations of his ailing body. From Psalms 131, my mind is not noisy with desire, and my heart has satisfied its longing. I have soothed and quieted my soul, and I am as peaceful as a child sleeping in its mother's arms. Jim had a deep love of his family, had a deep love for his three children, Jimmy, Lisa, and Ashley, and his four grandkids, and his dear brothers and sisters. Jim was a voracious and avid reader. He studied and was fascinated by Joseph Campbell, Carl Jung, the elusive collective unconscious and mythologies. And he was also a fan of T.S. Eliot. Jim celebrated his 26th AA birthday this past fall. And he was very devoted to meetings and sponsorship. You'd see him right over there in that chair most days at 11 a.m. meeting. Then you'd see him again at the 5:45 meeting right in that chair. And then depending on what day it was, you might see him at the 8 o'clock meeting as well. He really understood the agony of addiction and isolation, and he was very aware of the importance in the work we do here in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a trusted friend and a counselor to many people throughout the years here. This is a time in our service where we're going to ask people to come up and speak. And due to some time restraints, we've selected some of Jim's close friends to come up and talk. And Gus is going to start us out.
Thank you, Susan. And thanks to everybody for coming to celebrate Jim's life. I really would rather not be here today, but Jim was my dear friend for 22 years, and for the last 3 years, he lived at my house, and we were best friends. We talked endlessly about everything. When I was asked to do this, I couldn't really think of what to say. I knew so much about Jim because of all the hours we spent, and finally I think I became inspired to write a poem about his life. And it's not in iambic pentameter like Jim would have it, but it sounds kind of second grade-y, but I'm going to start out. Read the first verse and then call on the first speaker. Grab your seat. Jim loved all kinds of women, big busted, tall or small. Come to think of it, he loved them all. Jim brought me to my first meeting in 1994. And I think the meeting that we went to the most was the Saturday night at 8 o'clock behind the curtain. Well, they call it the curtain, I don't know, it's an accordion. But there were many, many great people in that meeting. Some have passed, Bob Meadows, Dick Hickey. Some have moved away. Some are in this room today. And one of the women that Jim truly loved is here, and she has agreed to say a few words. So I'm going to call on June from Douglasville.
Thanks for that nice introduction, Gus. I'm June. I'm an alcoholic. And when I first moved down here, I came to NABA, and as Gus described, especially the Saturday night meeting, we had a whole bunch of us. I guess you can call it a posse. And we would come to the meeting and go out to dinner or whatever, and we just had so much fun together, but the things I could tell you I remember about Jim, one of the things he used to share at meetings was he was one of those people who had that white light experience like Bill W. had, and it was such a powerful experience for him that he just never forgot it, and he talked about it, when he told his story. I did not have that type of an experience, but the way he described it, it was something that was awesome, just as Bill described it. So I had, I really got a lot out of Jim for that, just, for sharing that. And he was very serious at meetings and talked about his alcoholism. He hated it. He used to say, "I hate it with every fiber of my body." But you get him out of meetings, and he was such a clown, that we would just have so much fun. Even sometimes, like I said, this crazy crew. I remember one time, it was a Saturday night, and Mark Dean was telling his story, sitting in this chair, and Dick Hickey was in that chair, and he showed up with his headphones and a magazine while Mark was telling his story. And everybody just got it. That's how, everybody would just rip each other. It was just so much fun. There was just so much love among all of these people. Great, great experiences. And he used to tell stories when we'd go out to dinner, but he would be laughing so hard that you'd have to wait for him, for the laughing to stop so you can get through the rest of the story. He was just, he just killed his own self. I mean, not literally, but he amused himself, and I love that about him. And about a year ago, maybe, we were having dinner and talking about some of the things we wanted to do. One of the things I wanted to do was take tango lessons. The Argentine tango. I thought, wow, that would be so cool. And Jim said, you know, I always wanted to do that too. So we talked about taking tango lessons. Of course, you know, talking and doing is two different things. But a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking about, you know, maybe it's time to call Jim and see if he wants to go and do those tango lessons. And one of the things they do in tango is that, you know, they give this thing, and then you hook your leg around his leg or whatever, and I said, oh, you know, one of us is going to fall if I ever do that. I said, but I hope it's him, really, you know. Anyway, but I mean, it wasn't, I guess it just wasn't meant to be, but I think his son had said to me, you know, go and take those tango lessons, and I will. I'm going to do that for both of us, you know, and There is one other thing that now my mind went blank about. What there was one thing I wanted to say about Jim, but Dwayne, I can't think of what the heck it was. What was the last thing that I really wanted? What I came here to share. Oh, got it. Thank you. Okay. When I moved from this area out to Douglasville, and I'd come back and go to the 5:45 and the 8 o'clock meetings, which I thought it was something I would do all the time, but it got old real fast. You know, I did make a home in Douglasville, and it's a wonderful home, but when I would go to meetings, Jim would lean over to me and he'd say, how's everything in Birmingham? And he teased me a lot about being in Birmingham. And a few years ago, like, I was in at the Now Club in Douglasville, and who walks in the gym? Wow. You know, he had spent some time living in Paulding County, and I leaned over and I said, hey, Jim, welcome to Birmingham. So, I mean, the joking and the fun and the love was always there, and, you know, those things you can't pay money for, you know. It was just a lot of love. And I'm going to miss my buddy. But I'll see him I'll see him in the big meeting up in the sky. All right. Thanks. All right.
We wish you'd move back over to this part of town, Jim. Verse 2. Jim loved fat dogs. Jim loved skinny dogs. Come to think of it, Jim loved any dogs. Everybody's heard the story about Jim and I piling my two dogs, BJ and Jerry, in the backseat of the car and driving down to Ponce de Leon to Krispy Kreme and buying 2 dozen hot ones. And we'd put them out in the car and we'd take the long way back down Piedmont Road and we'd throw the donuts up in the back seat, and those dogs would catch them before they hit the seat. I moved in with Jim in 1994 for a couple of weeks. One night I came home from work, and I told this at the 5:45 the day he died, but I came home and the entire house was engulfed in grease smoke. And what Jim had done, he had bought a steak, and he had this old black skillet, and he had turned the heat up as high as he could, and he fried that steak with potatoes and onions. And he and his dog, Sebastian, were sitting there on that old blue leather couch. Jimmy knows what I'm talking about. And they were eating out of the same pan. My dog weighed 26 pounds when Jim moved in. He weighs 40 now. So, but the other kind of dogs Jim liked were old dogs. And one of them showed up here today. There's not a guy in the room that Jim didn't talk more about. I haven't seen him in years. He was my first sponsor here at NAVA. And he's one of the best speakers I've ever heard. That's the only compliment you'll ever get from me, Sonny. So I'm going to bring Sonny up here now. Sonny Walker. My name is Sonny Walker, and I'm an alcoholic. Jim's the best friend I ever had. And for y'all that know us, we were kind of inseparable for a lot of years. We were just together all the time. You know, like Jim, I never lived in this area. I lived in Forest Park. And then moved to Conyers, and I drove here for two meetings every day, too. But that's what it took for me to be sober. I don't really remember when I met Jim. Tom Boone really formally introduced us. I thought Tom would be here today. And Jim and myself and Tom had dinners once a week because Tom wasn't working, and he couldn't afford to go out and eat. And we would have dinners once a week at each other's house and take turns cooking. And we talked about things you didn't talk about in meetings. And we had a great mind there. Jim and I kept it up. One thing we did, I know a lot about Jim. Most of it can't be told. But Gus was right. Jim loved children. He loved dogs. Jim loved people. Jim was one of the most gentle souls. He just was. He was just a gentle soul. And Gus and I were talking. They couldn't find me. We had our home phone turned off. It had been off the hook for 3 weeks. So we decided we'll just turn it off because my wife and I and our two kids have cell phones and really don't need it. So they couldn't find me. Tom wrote me a letter about Jim. I had talked to Jim on the 12th of December. It was the last time I talked to him. Kind of what happened, I got married. There's a picture up here of Jim and myself. He was best man in my wedding. And then there's more pictures of Jim at my house, at the hospital when my children were born. Oh, well. I opened the door the other night and heard my wife telling my kids, and she was crying. She said, the first person I called when Sonny's daughter died was Jim. And the first person I called when our daughter was in intensive care at Eggleston, didn't know if she was going to live when she was 6 weeks old, was Jim. Jim got to the hospital before Candy got to the hospital. And in the hospital, I remember Jim, myself, Bob Meadows, and Dick Icke. And the minister from Unity Church at the time was Albert Wingate, and we were all sitting there. Well, everybody's gone but me. And I'm scared. Hair dropping like damn flies. I mean, but I heard Candy talking to my kids. I just shut the door and didn't go in there because I wanted her to have her privacy and finish her conversation with them. Jim was our daughter's godfather. And our son's godfather is in the room today, too. There's two of them. But again, Jim and I were inseparable. We went to West Palm Beach every February for a week of serious AA work. It was mostly eating and having a good time, and I got on a shirt from Sailfish Marina. We ate at Sailfish Marina every night for years. We did that. Candy and I were kind of for that 10, 12 years maybe, didn't we, Jimmy? I don't know how long it was, but every year February we went to West Palm Beach. With the pretense we were going to do a fourth and fifth step. And we actually did. And it was usually the last day on the beach. We were riding. And there was a little Catholic church there. We would go to the garden and the church. And we would, every year, for years, did a fifth step. And it was more of an annual house cleaning and getting all this crap out of your head, dumping it out. And it was just a good time. We had a ball. The only time we didn't go to Sailfish Marina to eat, we wanted some stone crab claws one night and ended up at a country club somewhere. And Jim thought that was funny. We had our shorts on and drove up to valet parking. I think Jim said something like, "We're shitting in high cotton now." And again, you know, Dust was talking about the dog. Jim always said he killed Sebastian with those donuts, you know. And as the years went on and we put on weight, we used to talk about, you know, inside of me there's a thin guy screaming to get out. About six of those Krispy Kremes will shut his ass up. Let's go down to Posilia and see if the light's on. And that's kind of the way Jim did things. You know, they couldn't find me because I had my phone turned off. I had cell phones. And I talked to Jim on the 13th, and I told Gus, I said, I had to be in his phone, but Jim wouldn't have ever thought to put a name next to that number. Jim just didn't do things like that, you know, and that was okay. Now, I'm very anal, and how we got along so well, I don't know, but we did. We just got along great. I don't ever remember a crossword between us, ever. Gus was telling me Jim was pretty liberal in his political views. I didn't know that. We never talked politics. But Gus was right about everything he said. You know, I know Jim used to say, I go in a restaurant and I look around and I pick the girl that's rubbing the mashed potatoes in her hair or stuffing the peas up her nose. I say, look at her. She looks like a warthog now, but I'll love her into a unicorn. And I know all the Guinevere's, Jim, and the princesses, and Jim just liked to have fun. He loved his children. He loved Jimmy and Lisa and Ashley. I was looking at a picture of our wedding where Ashley was in the background. She was about to stop. He loved his children. They didn't have to do anything. He just loved them. He was proud of them. He was proud of Jimmy. What everything he was always telling me, Jimmy's doing this, Lisa's doing this. He's a great guy. If you didn't know, Jim, I was at his graduation at Catholic Church of Stevens Ministry. He was a lay minister. I went to, I don't know how many lectures over at Emory of all these youngin' guys and I forget the guys. Now, we were big into Joseph Campbell and all that back then, and we would go to all these lectures, and I still have most of that stuff. I have some of Jim's stuff, sort of his Loyola University books, some of them, and Jim was very learned. I brought a shirt today he had brought me from the Holy Land. He used to go there and dig on archaeology sites. There's a rock laying on top of it. That's from the Judean wilderness. And I have an olive branch at home that he broke off a tree in the Garden of Gethsemane. Probably wasn't supposed to do that, but he knew that was something. I would rather have a rock and a branch than, buy me a present. And Jim lived life like he wanted to live it. And he loved AA. He loved AA. And Saturday night meetings, that was our home group for probably 15 years. I don't know. It's hard for me to keep up with time. I don't even remember my sobriety date. I had to ask Fred after Bob Meadows died. He was the one that kept up with my sobriety. Of course, Candy kind of keeps up with it, too. Keeps me straight. But, you know, Hope, I see Hope. Hope used to call me and Jim the boys. She said, the boys are here. We were just always together, I guess. And we did everything together. We went to dinner together. Here's a funny story about them. We used to go to dinner, and Candy and I would make a point to say, see how he was going to get this food in his eyebrow or in his ear. But somewhere during dinner, every meal, Jim would have food somewhere. You'd never see him do it. You would never see him do it. And he would eat an ear of corn, and most people got a little pattern, you know. Jim would mutilate it down there. We used to just be fascinated. But again, you know, that I love Jim for the more. I mean, he was just as free, and I mean, and we talked about everything. I know most of Jim's past, most of his childhood. Can't tell it because it was kind of in confidence, you know. And he sure ain't going to tell on me now. But anyway, I'm sorry. I kind of got involved in Candy and myself. We, our kids were both playing travel sports, and we got involved in that. And we were all over the Candy. Sometimes would be in one state, and I'd be in another state, and we'd be playing soccer and baseball. And very time-consuming, and Jim and I's friendship never waned. I could not see him for a year, and we'd just pick right back up. But our being with each other certainly is a disappointment to me, and I wish I had done more. I talked to him on the 12th and told him I'd try to get down here Christmas Day to pick up a chip, and I didn't. Bob Meadows, I don't know, a lot of you know Bob, and he gave me my chip for probably 25 years. And, after he died, I tried to come once a week while Bob was alive last year and a half, and after Bob died, it was just like, well, something changed. And Mabel was always my home group, and like I said, I never lived near here. But I was in the hospital across the street, and this was the first place they brought me, and it was kind of like I didn't know you could go to another AA club. But Jim and I went to AA clubs all over the place. Candy and I would meet. We met Jim and Sebastian Inlet one time, and we had been to Tampa. And we were talking about that day. Best tomato sandwich I ever had. We stopped in a tomato field, and Candy made Jim and I tomato sandwiches there on the beach and strawberries. And that's just the way we did things. We loved the beach. I couldn't find a picture this morning. I made Candy and Jim get up one Easter morning and go watch the sun come up on Tybee Island. And as soon as it popped up, they said, can we go back to bed today? But I had a picture of that as the sun came up, and I couldn't find it. It's actually framed somewhere, but Candy's been rearranging. Funny thing about marriage, when I got married to Candy, we had two households and combined them, and then one day I looked around and there wasn't nothing of mine left. I don't know what happened. Kind of way it's still happening. I don't know where my picture is, but I love Jim. I love his family. I don't know what else to say. Jim was a wonderful guy. He loved this place here. He just loved AA, and he was a true elder statesman, I thought. Jim would get to talking sometimes in step meetings, and Jim would kind of get ahead of himself sometimes, and he'd end this and so on and so forth, and we finished. I said, Jim, I don't have a damn clue what you were talking about. So he'd have to explain it to me. Jim was pretty deep on a lot. I've never been deep. That's right. I couldn't get that far. But he, Jim loved, like I say, we got into all the Bradshaws and Joseph Campbell. I forget this guy's name that you would tie rags on where you were wounded. And he was on TV. Anyway, we went to Emory to see him. It was about, you know, men that had so many scars and things. We were into all of that. And that's kind of, today I talk to people and say, you know, you just go through these little phases in sobriety. You know, you do what you got to do to stay sober. Jim was a huge, huge part of me staying sober. Like I say, he was there. When my daughter committed suicide when she was 16. And Jim and I don't know how we ended up in Florida. I had a house down there then in a little town called Steinahatchee, a little fishing town. And Jim and Tom and myself went down there and walked and talked and you know, tried to get through that. And he was always there, everything. My son was born, He was there. He had to go out of the room while the event happened, but as soon as it was over, he was filmed. I mean, that's just the way it was. He was at the hospital for it, and here's how that worked. Candy went to the doctor and ended up in the hospital. She called Jim and said, I want you to head to the house and get Sonny. I don't want him driving because he'll be so shook up. And that's how it happened. Jim came and got me. My clothes were laid out on the bed. And they got me to the hospital. Same with my daughter at the hospital. They hadn't been for Jim there. I mean, when I hit the hospital and they told me she was in ICU, I couldn't walk anymore, you know. She was a little baby 6 weeks old. And anyway, Jim was there. He was always there. Always, always there. Jim was always there. If you were friends with Jim, he was your friend.
Gus.
I'm so glad Gus was with him. I really am. I would hope a friend will be with me when I pass from this world. And I know, you know, Jim's okay. I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. I know Jim's okay. Jim had a good life. He had an enjoyable life. He loved his life. Could have been a little richer. Could have been a few more ladies. But he loved his life. He really did. And we loved Jim. If you knew Jim at all, you loved him. Because he was just that guy. I'm going to quit. I'm going to hang around a little while. Like I said, we got some pictures up here if you want to see them. I got a lot more at home. We just picked a few out of Jim. Had one in his underwear. Candy didn't bring that one. But here's kind of how that worked. One of Candy's friends, after I got married, Jim and I still went to West Palm Beach every year for a week. And one of her friends asked her one time, said, aren't you worried about Sonny going down there with a single man? And Candy said, the most important thing they'll do tonight is decide what kind of ice cream they're going to have. And that's the truth. I can see Jim right now sitting in that bed and looking at me and saying, what's it going to be, chocolate or strawberry tonight? And that's the way it was. That's it. Thank you.
Sonny, you're right. Jim thought my dogs loved him because they licked him in the face when we came home from dinner, but there was no. Verse 3. Jim loved Winston Churchill. Archaeology was a yearning. It seems to me Jim just loved learning. Many of y'all know that I practice up in a little town called Tryon, North Carolina, and there's a writer's colony up there. And Jim had probably read the Manchester book or the first two volumes on Churchill's life 10 times each. And he was, Manchester died, and the third volume never came out, and Jim was upset about that. And it turned out that Manchester had selected a writer up in Tryon to write the third volume. And a friend of mine owns a bookstore up in Tryon, so he knew the writer, and he arranged for Jim and I and several other people to meet this writer. And the writer took us to lunch, and then he took us over to his house and showed us the massive amount of research he had done on this third volume, and Jim just couldn't get enough of it. He didn't want to leave. And one guy in here that knows how much intellectual pursuits Jim pursued was Fred Hart. I know they have many, many conversations, and Fred, as an old timer, agreed to say some words about Jim.
Now, my name is Fred the Lesser. And if you come to the 11 o'clock meeting, you know what that meant. Jim died on a Wednesday, that previous Monday at the 11 o'clock meeting. He was chairing the meeting on our first tradition, and he called on me and Fred the Lesser because we got Fred the Greater, and he's probably wanted to borrow some money from us. I don't know. He was full of a lot of life that day, and I happened to come to the 5:45 on Tuesday, and he was cutting up with Howard, and he was just full of life. I know Jim from when he first came in. We were both wearing three-piece suits. Jim could do something to a three-piece suit. He was pretty consistent, but I knew him pretty well the first years that he was here, and then he went off, and then when I started coming to this 11 o'clock meeting, he was always here. But when I came to the 7 meeting, he was always here. I don't know if y'all are familiar with the Big Bang Theory and Sheldon, and about, you know, that's my spot. Jim always had a spot in every meeting he went to. In the 11 o'clock meeting, that was his spot. And on Mondays, when the chairs were all scattered, he'd say, those damn Al-Anons been messing with it again. He would make his nest again. On the Saturday night meeting, he was always on the far side, right next to the speaker. I don't know, I guess I'm territorial, but when somebody's trying to tell me who they know in the program, and I'm bad on names, I'm good on faces, I ask where they sit, and I can usually figure it out. We had a lot of people. Jim sat there, Bobby Meadows sat there, Stan Parks, he'd sit where this file cabinet is now. I don't know, Jim's just special to me. He was a class act for me. I'm hearing more about him than I think I wanted to know. But you don't really know, for me, I didn't really know how much he meant to me until he was gone so quick. We shared a lot of stuff. He went to 8111 and actually worked with my older brother, who has never been able to make it in this place. And not many people have met my older brother. You would never put him as my brother. He looks like he's, you know, hanging out at the Union Street Mission, always. But Jim never gave up hope on him. He said, you know, like, people change. That's given me a lot of strength, a lot of hope in dealing with him. Jim, he talked about his Dead Sea Scrolls, and we'd make fun of him, but he always shared who he was. He never shared who he wanted you to be. He shared who he was. And that was something I was admired from him from the very first. It's what brought me into the program, you know. People shared what they'd done. They didn't share their advice. Or if they did, you didn't have to listen to them. So. He was a special man, if you remember. We don't do these memorials for a lot of people in here when they die. He just gives you an idea he was special. Thanks.
Fred, I never did find those hearing aids that you gave me. Jim's favorite word is, huh? Verse 4. Jim loved donuts, macaroni, cookies, fried fish. On further observation, Jim loved almost every dish. On Thursday evenings, some of the elder statesmen gather against the TV wall downstairs for the meal, and all of us are at least 65 years old, and you guys may know this, Roy and Larry and Gene, but Jim called it the Dead Peckers Club. Gene Duckett is from the club, has agreed to speak, and then I'll have your Viagra up here when you finish.
Falsely accused. I ain't Gene Duckett, I'm an alcoholic. When I first came into this fellowship, I had a heck of a problem with the God of my understanding, having been a long-standing, devout, hedonistic, backsliding Baptist. 545 meeting was one of my regulars. I for a long time went to the 545 and the 9 or the 8 o'clock. Sonny and Jim were sort of role models for me. Their conversation about going to the beach and doing a fourth and fifth step with one another. And Jim finally mentioned something about Joseph Campbell. And so we struck up a conversation, and he shared with me some tapes he had of Moyer's interviews with Campbell, which in fact led to my being able to find a God of my understanding instead of misunderstanding. And so they personified to me what a sober man is like. And for that, I'm very grateful. Jim and I became fairly good friends. I was not real close to him. We were not real close friends. But I always enjoyed his company, and I always enjoyed our conversations. And he just didn't have enough history on me to include me into his persona, his dead pecker club. Thank you very much.
Gene, what you said kind of dovetails into verse 5 here. Jim loved an ineffable God. He never had doubts about him. It is easy to see why God loved and blessed Jim. Rusty, come on up and talk.
I'm Rusty Jones. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. You know, I'm sitting here listening, and I haven't heard Paul Killick's name thrown into the list of people that were Jim's real teachers. That last meal that up the hill there where we ate that Tuesday night. Jim and I were both great believers in and practiced the meeting after the meeting. And I'm grateful for those times and those discussions about dogs and women and food and some of the great teachers that have left their place, and Jim has left his place. And you know, the candle that I burn is beautiful, and it reminds me that Jim is still with us and will be. And Jim was a friend of running buddy, accountability partner. There are no right words to hang on. Sometimes, you know, labels can do relationships a disservice. So, you know, I did not dress up for Jim. That somehow seemed like a contradiction. I do have a black outfit that I wear, but Gus dressed up enough for all of us, I think. Gus and a bunch of us did so many meetings after the meeting at so many places. And he'll be missed, but he'll always be with us. And Jim Harp led a full one. He led a full life. It didn't take him as long as it does some others, but he led a much fuller life than, and that's what I'll take with me, and that's what I'll shut up with.
Jim did live a full life. One particular discussion that we had over and over again is about when Moses went up on Mount Sinai and saw the burning bush, and he asked God what his name is. What's your name? How shall I call you? And God said, I am that I am. And the one thing that we agreed to the perfect T was that God was telling Moses, quit trying to define me and experience me. If that's not what a higher power is, then I don't know what a higher power is. On to lighter topics. Jim loved to relax. He was not afraid to be called lazy. The older I get, this doesn't seem crazy. I can't tell you why I asked God to speak about that. Character building. My name is Bud, and I'm an alcoholic. And I've been sitting here listening, and first thoughts of Jim, but I look around this room, and I'm going to say some names, because when I first came in, these were the people that were here. That was a little over, 22 years ago, 22 and a half years ago. There was Sonny and Tom Boone and Jim, and then Sonny and Candy, and this old fellow over here with the shiny head. He and Hope, and they weren't... What is your name? Anyway, they married, and my sponsor, Paul, and so many, Brooke, and Rox back there, and just, I don't mean to leave anyone out, because I could go through just name after name after name, and I hated all these people. They were laughing and cutting up and having a good time, and they were part of AA, and I was on the outside, and I was angry and felt alone. And they'd laugh and cut up, and that laughter, you know, they didn't realize how serious this was. I knew that I needed to educate and teach. Now, how are you going to teach a PhD anything? I don't even have an undergraduate degree. Close, but I don't have one. And it took me a while to learn, and learn by example, about their example, by y'all's example. Many of you whom are here, Tom Boone's not here, but he was part of it. Stu Green was part of that. That taught me how to behave as a human being. They tried for 20 some odd years, I'll put it that way. And some of it I've garnered. But one of the things, there was Mr. Brown, you know, the one they talk about in the big book. I didn't know a Mr. Brown, so I thought that didn't apply to me. And Jim would laugh quite frequently. And actually, it wasn't a laugh. It was more like a smirk. But I thought it was a laugh. And he was just letting me go. But there's a phrase that reminds me. It's from the book of Isaiah. And I'm not a Bible thumper, but the passages have taken on new and different meanings since I've been in this program. And it says, in quietness and in confidence shall be your strength. And that, I think, is appropriate to Jim. He had that quiet, soft way. He had gone through the trials, the tribulations, and he went through it. He didn't get over it, under it, around it, didn't deny it. He had gone through, and he was tempered by AA. And that strength showed, just like it has with Stugren and with Sonny and people who've gone through the tough part of life, and they've gone through it and come through it with dignity. And these people are the examples that our big book talked about that inspired me and kept me going. And it wasn't just about me. You hear the laughter, you hear the humor. They were these people, because I have a tendency to take myself very seriously. And these people, don't they take AA seriously? And they take life seriously. And they live it, and live it to the fullest. But it's in quietness and in confidence shall be your strength. That applies. And that's the legacy all these people leave us, leave me with, and inspire me with. Both living and dead, by medicine, whoever. And that's something I think we all take from this program. But these people that are with us and not with us, Jim prominent among them, Gus, Susan, that's called, I think, love. And that's what we're left with Jim and these people. Thank you.
Verse 7. Jim loved Georgia Tech. That is a fact. His greatest goal was to teach Howard to add and subtract. The one thing that Jim was the happiest about was that you finally got 3 months of 90 days. Y'all don't know about that? He loved you, Howard. And we had great times with you in the church.
My name is Howard, and I'm an alcoholic. And I purposely checked this list to see if my name was on it, and it wasn't. And I felt a great sigh of relief. I love Jim Harp. My relationship with Jim was kind of like, if any of y'all remember the old TV show, he was Master Poe, and I was the grasshopper. Jim would guide me from that chair right there over to my chair during meetings. The first couple of things he said to me, first time when I moved over there, he told me, you know, you can only sit here if you're serious about sobriety. If not, move back over there with Gordon. The next thing he told me was, take the cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth. Then he told me, don't worry about your fourth step. I'll do that for you. And he did an excellent job of that, too. He really did. I asked him one day about a certain step that when I was working the steps, and I asked him about a certain step, and I asked him his opinion on it. He says, what you need to do is stick to the two steps you're best at, 1 and 13. And he literally meant that. You know, when I first heard that Jim had, when the doctor came out and told us that Jim had gone, I felt like I'd been just punched and kicked in the stomach. It was It's such a loss. It's such a tremendous loss. I was angry. I was very angry that this man had been removed from my life. But then I thought about it, and I thought, man, what a blessing that God allowed me to spend this time with him and learn so much from him and to learn to become a better human being, because Jim helped me a lot with tolerance. A lot with tolerance. I had a bad case of contempt before investigation. And Jim said, you can't do that in these rooms. You really get to know these people. He said, once you do, they'll give you plenty of reasons not to like them. So, I'm going to miss Jim. I really am. I prefer to celebrate his life right now than mourn his death. I know that he's up there in heaven, and I know that heaven's a better place. And when it's my time and I'm gone, Jim, I'll holler up at you. Thank you.
Howard, that was great. I'm sorry to surprise you. Jim loved the Braves, but he didn't sniff jocks. If he had a sports hero, it would be Bobby Cox. His exact opposite. I think Bobby got thrown out of, 168 games during his career? For arguing with the umpires. One of Jim's old friends from the, who I know from the Alpharetta group, was supposed to be here, and I don't see him. Ryan's not here, is he? Okay. Jim and I watched baseball together for the last 3 years. We watched at least 100 games together, and the 60 games that I missed, he watched. He was an avid Braves fan, and the only time he ever missed a game was for that Saturday night meeting, which he loved. But he would come home and catch the last innings. And one night, my son, Rob, gave us tickets from his company to go down and sit in the SunTrust seats. I don't know whether y'all know what those are, but they're right behind home plate, and they're padded leather chairs. And if you see the people coming out of the entrance into those padded leather chairs, they're coming from a dining room that has linen tablecloths and silver and crystal and some of the most exotic food you've ever eaten. And then you go and you sit in your seat, and they hand you a menu and say, anything you want, you can have. And it just so happened that this was an extra inning game. It went about 16 innings. And Jim had everything on the menu. He said it was the best sports night of his life. And the Braves won. Jim loved Democrats, FDR, JFK, liberals, the unions. Jim loved many things, but he hated Republicans. Jim didn't hate Republicans. He didn't understand them. The only thing that I think Jim hated was the word hate. And that's the truth. Jim loved everything. And he was very tolerant. And the two things that he taught me over the last 3 years, a little bit, Sonny, were patience and tolerance. I'm going to ask Jim's son, who I call Jimmy, to come up here. I've known this guy for 22 years, and he was a lot younger. He's still young, but he was a lot younger then. I've always called him Jimmy, but with the passing, he's now Jim.
Well, this is supposed to be easier than last week.
You guys
made it a little tough. those of you who know my father from 26, 27, I guess foggy these days, 27 years ago, I came here with him. Dad couldn't drive anymore because he had 3 or so DUIs, I think, Sonny. I think the last one he was went to sleep in his Lincoln car that he destroyed halfway in the road and halfway in a parking lot. Couldn't believe he was getting arrested. He was so angry. He was so mad. And then he tried to tell the police officer that he himself was a cop, which he wasn't. That's a true story. And I'm sure you guys over the years have heard. So for the first 3 years of his sobriety, I drove him here every meeting. I learned to shoot pool here. I learned things that I can't tell anybody ever. I learned things. They told me how to drink. So I was I'm not an alcoholic to my knowledge at this point. But I listened to all the stories and I sat in every meeting and they would tell me how I should go drink and how to do it properly if I was going to do it well. And they taught me how to shoot pool and a lot of things that happened in here. And I know this place well. It's changed quite a bit. But it's still the same and I see familiar faces. And that's a long time. My father didn't like vanilla. Even though he loved it as an ice cream, he despised it in a person. He wanted to peel you back and find out what awful things you did, how despicable you could be, or what you thought was the worst type of humor you could hear, and then he would get to know you like that. I learned so much in here, and my sisters couldn't be here today. They had to work. It's been, as you can imagine, very busy. But I wanted you to know, and I think my father would want you to know, that we stood on the top of his sobriety. We didn't move away from it. We embodied it as a family. And it was because of my father becoming sober that he has beautiful grandchildren. Reasonably strong son. And we've got an amazing life. And he was at everything for you and for us. And he was at the hospital for each child and the churches for every wedding. And he just has an amazing family. And this is another family of his. And as he rode his wave of sobriety, and I watched it for many years, actively for a long time, and then completely inactively for most of my life, really, you became a different family. He was invited to my house for Christmas. And where did he end up? Waffle House and here, I think. But it was okay with him. It was okay with us. We invited him for things all the time. Sometimes he'd come. Sometimes, if you needed him to be there, he'd be there. But otherwise, he wanted to do what he wanted to do, and he lived his life that way. He did not want to be old. He did not want to take medicines. He did not want to outlive his children. It scared him to death. He wanted to eat a lot of Krispy Kreme donuts. And he wanted to steal everybody's dogs. He stole my dogs, too. We lived across the street from him when I first moved back from out west, Colorado, where I met my wife. And I had a nice Labrador, great shape. The dog had gone rivers and climbed mountains with me. Within a month, my dog, I couldn't get him to come back across the street. I just kept feeding him, baking. It runs in my family. My aunt, I came in one time and she said, I'm cooking the dog a hamburger. Would you like one? This is my family. I'll tell you one more story that is very interesting with Gus and Sonny, because I know they are good businessmen and anal and about keeping records and everything. My father kept befriending those types of people. My dad, we wanted to put him in sweats, send him on. But we couldn't because they were covered in every food he'd ever eaten. So I had to put him in a nice shirt and a jacket, which he'll probably haunt me for. But one year the IRS wanted to audit him. And you've seen his records. Sonny, I think, saw him one time. Candy's still in therapy for seeing those records. So my father's idea of keeping records was write a check and make no record of it, ever. And so the IRS came into auditing, and they sat first day. He was smoking at the time, and he can't hear, so the television's extremely loud, crazy loud. He's smoking, and they ask for his records. So he's like, well, I'll go down and get them. So he comes back up with a giant Rubbermaid bin, which had been flooded, with all of his records in it. They were all stuck together with dead crickets in them. It's a true story. He put it on the ground for them and said, I'm going to go take a nap. He didn't care what they found. I think that woman's in therapy now. I think she's quit the IRS a long time ago. But they basically, every paper they kept sending me, sent stuff back that didn't make any sense. They gave up. Finally, you know, it was an audit for whatever year they needed to audit for anyway. That was my father. My father lived life on his terms every day. He decided what he was going to do. He would not live by any other rule than what he wanted to live with. And the only lament that I have, the difficulty, is that same I think a lot of us have, and that extra 5 minutes you want with somebody. You just have that one more time because you just don't realize how life, how precious the time is and how quickly it goes by. But you meant a lot to him here, and I think it's really important to him. It's important to me. You know how important his sobriety was to him, how hard he worked for it. And as a result of it, so much incredible beauty from it. I can't tell you how wonderful our family is. Thank you guys for coming.
I like the music. What a testament to your dad you are. And finally, last verse. Jim loved AA. Drunks were his brothers. In his last years, his only job was working with others. I'm going to ask one of his sponsors, who's also one of my dear friends, to come up and close us out. Terry? Did I say sponsors? One of his sponsees.
Everybody, I'm Terry. I'm an alcoholic. And yes, he was my sponsor. I did not sponsor Jim, though sometimes I thought I was. I guess first of all, Jim, I don't know if anybody else is here, but I'd like to tell you from what he shared with me that he loved his family. I think his most regret was the finances. And we as alcoholics, we create a lot of wreckage, you know. And I have a daughter who I wish I could give more. But he had that sense that he wanted to do more. But he was there, and that's one thing that I've done in my family, is to be there. A lot of you guys know Jim a lot. I've known Jim since I got sober. He was around here. I know everybody that seems to have been talked about. I'm very blessed to know all these folks. And they're all older than me. actually, me and Jim had the same sponsor, Stan Parks, when we first got here. And I guess that puts me in the category how sick I was, too. I do know that, you know, Jim, I'm speak as a sponsor and not so much as a friend, because I didn't get a lot of time with Jim. But the reason I picked Jim to be my sponsor is because he was kind of in that family tree. You know, with Stan Parks and I knew Sonny and all those guys that they had talked about, and I had lost three sponsors, all sober, cancer to two of them, and emphysema to the other one, and they all actually gave me some time to get another sponsor, but Jim went pretty quick, so I feel like I still haven't, you know, come to terms with that, because it's so sudden and you just don't realize how much you miss somebody, you know, till they're gone. But I do know now how important Jim was to me, and I'll share a couple of things. First of all, my first 6 months of being his sponsor, asking him to be my sponsor, well, until after 6 months, I realized he was hard of hearing on one side, so everything I said for 6 months was on the left side. He didn't hear nothing. So I was wondering why he was so calm and collective and, you know, just took my dramatic stuff so nonchalantly. And I do know that Jim liked all dogs except the Georgia Bulldogs. He said he loved his brother and his brother liked him, so he had to give him consideration. I'm just going to share real quick. Jim saved my life like every sponsor that I had in this program. Like I said, a lot of you know him a lot better than I do, but I knew him as a sponsor. And he was there for me, just like his family. He was there for me when I needed him. And there was one time that my family was hurt in sobriety. And I don't talk about this much. And I won't talk about it much because other people are involved. But I was ready to kill somebody. They hurt my family. And Jim saved my life, because I would be in prison if I did something like that. Not that it wasn't justified in my eyes, but it's just not the thing we do. And Jim took me down to the monastery. We did our step work. I'd never been down there before. And Sonny, we talked. He talked about some of y'all's times together and the things that you went through, and it helped me tremendously. So I got through it, and I was just getting trained. I am very grateful to what he was to help me through. And the other thing that he really was so good at was he'd been through the tough times, so he knew things would change. He just kept telling me, Terry, you just got to keep going, do the right thing, it's going to get better. And the finances hadn't got better yet, but I'm 2 semesters away from an associate degree in applied science. And, and my daughter is not even 19 yet, and she's almost a junior in college. So thanks, Jim. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. And thank you, guys.
I think Fred touched on this when he was sharing that sometimes, unfortunately, we don't realize everything that we've learned from someone until they're gone. And then it becomes very clear, all the blessings we received. We learn so much from each other, especially here in these rooms. Sometimes we're the teacher, and sometimes we're the student. But whatever role we're in, I know we are blessed because of it. And in closing, I ask you to think about something. What blessings are you receiving from the people that are alive in your life today? What are they teaching you? Then I ask you to think about what blessings are you giving? And what are you teaching? These are the things of substance, and these are the things that matter. And I know Jim knew that well. So I remind you that you are a beloved child of God. And who you are and what you do does make a difference. Be gentle with yourselves and one another. God bless each and every one of you. And thank you for being here today. And we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer.